On this episode of Inside the U.S. Open,
we've taken about 80% of the footprint of what used to be the old Louis Armstrong and Grandstand, and after it got demolished this past fall, we did all the underground work, and then we came out of the ground with the steel.
I just love how slowly they speak. Yes. And how they pronounce each syllable. Like, hello, everybody. We are here at NPR in Chicago and New York City. I just love the voice. It's so soothing.
I think for 17, the biggest difference is Temporary Louis and this massive structure. Yes. In the middle of the site.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to our first episode of Inside the U.S. Open. I'm Nick McCarville, and I'm your host here on Inside the U.S. Open. And on this episode, we're taking a look on what is new on and off the court here in Flushing Meadows as we chat with the COO of the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center, Mr. Danny Zausner. Then we've got a little chat with Andrea Petkovic. She's a former world number 9 from Germany, and she loves being in New York City. We're going to get some time with Petco, as they call her. And then lastly, we've got USTA Chief Executive for Professional Tennis, Stacey Allister, telling us all about what's new for the players this year at the U.S. Open. It's a packed premiere, so let's get right to it, beginning with Mr. Danny Zausner. I'm here with Danny Zausner, who's the Chief Operating Officer of the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center. That's a long title, Danny, but you've got a lot of responsibilities, and the preparation for you and your team each U.S. Open starts essentially the day after the other one, the one prior ends, right?
You're spot on, Nick. Basically, the day after the Open, we already realize we're behind schedule for the next year.
Yeah. All right. So 2016 ends. What were you guys looking to, now that we've arrived at the 2017 U.S. Open, what were you looking to change as far as the fan experience and the overall look and feel of the National Tennis Center?
Well, we spent about 5 minutes reveling in the fact that we had a roof over Arthur Ashe Stadium, we had a brand new grandstand, and we had a whole new South Campus with 10 new field courts, and realized that we were going to break ground immediately on a Louis Armstrong Stadium, which meant that we had to demolish the old one, which had been there since 1978. So there was 40 years of history that had to get removed from that building before demolition started right around October 1st. And while the building wouldn't be done till 2018, we knew that for 2017, we wanted to have at least a temporary Louis Armstrong. So we had been working on a design for that and realized we were going to do that in our parking lot B that used to accommodate 100 people in parking spaces. Now is going to accommodate 8,500 people in stands watching tennis players on a court that was going to be built right in the middle of that parking lot. So while we couldn't build a temporary stadium till right around May, June of 2017, give us about 3 months to get ready for the tournament, we had to start the demolition right away because it was going to take us about 22 months to build the new Louis Armstrong Stadium. And there's no room for error for that not to be done for 2018. So we knew we'd be about halfway done with the construction for Armstrong. We wanted it to look pretty special when people came out here for 2017. And I know on the first day already, we're going to see people that'll be up there and say, wow, look at this thing. And we got the renderings all over the place showing people what to expect next year. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, when we spoke last year, we were talking all about that new roof over Arthur Ashe Stadium. But detail for me some of the numbers and human effort and everything that went into that temporary Louis Armstrong. Because, I mean, 8,500 seats, it's one of your biggest show courts, obviously, here. That's not a small effort.
No, you're absolutely right. Listen, it took us 18 months to build the grandstand, which is 8,100 seats, and this temporary stadium is 8,500 seats, and it's anything but temporary. I mean, the fact is that the players have to feel incredibly comfortable on there. Like, it's a Grand Slam tournament. It's the number 2 court. The fans have to feel it's special and intimate. It just happens to have a couple of really great trees in the background there, which will be a nice added feature. Players practicing so far thought it was pretty cool, and I hope the fans react the same way over the next 14 days. The other thing is we're broadcasting from there, so the broadcast partners have to have the right camera angles. We're doing instant replay from there. We got video screens there, sound. Everything about it has to feel like it's a permanent stadium. So the only thing temporary is the fact that it's going up and coming down, but while you're in there, you're going to feel like you're in a really comfortable stadium.
Okay, and then for the fans that are lucky enough to be here at the U.S. Open for these next couple weeks, they're obviously going to see the progress that you've made on Louis Armstrong for 2018. But as far as that building goes, just kind of detail where you guys are at, and then the hope is 2018 is going to be up and running.
Well, it needs to be more than a hope, but you're absolutely right. That is the goal, that for 2018 we'll have a complete stadium. And most of our fans come in through the East Gate because of where all the parking and the trains, all the transportation is. And when they come through the gate, you can't miss it. It's right there, right on the right-hand side. We've taken about 80% of the footprint of what used to be the old Louis Armstrong and Grandstand. And after it got demolished this past fall, we did all the underground work, and then we came out of the ground with the steel. So the entire circumference of that seating bowl for Louis Armstrong is in place right now. So you can really get a feel for the shape of what that stadium is, the size of it. It doesn't have the roof that will be on it yet, but it's got the steel up to the spot of where the roof will be. So you'll get a real feel for what it is, and it's pretty special already.
Okay, so say I was at the U.S. Open 5 years ago, 2012. I'm coming back in 2017. I mean, the whole place feels and has a lot of different looks to it as far as our new grandstand court that debuted Last year. But what else in 2017 is new around the grounds?
So even before you come in through the gates, we built a brand new ticket office. Ironically, people used to have to walk through parking lot B to get to our ticket office. They couldn't do that this year because there's a tennis court there. And they also couldn't do it because we tore down the old grandstand, which is where our ticket office was. So on the left-hand side of the East Gate, we built a beautiful new ticket office attached to our indoor training center. The old one used to have 17 windows. Now we've got 27 windows. So we're hoping the wait time will be significantly less for people waiting to the last minute to buy tickets. And then once you come through the gates, we've got the temporary stadium, we've got the construction of the new Louis Armstrong. We built a beautiful Mercedes activation center right in our South Plaza, which is flanking the whole fountains in the South Plaza, the entryway into Arthur Ashe. On the first floor, Mercedes did a phenomenal job outfitting a beautiful activation showroom. Mm-hmm. And on the second floor, we're going to have a wine bar up there, Cafe Spiaggia, which is with Tony Montuano, who's a famous chef from Chicago, runs the number one restaurant in Chicago. Been a part of our wine bar program for the last 10 years, and now we're doing this kind of a pop-up wine bar, Cafe Spiaggia, Italian restaurant. It's going to be pretty special.
Yeah, I've been walking by that, and it hadn't been revealed to me that it was a wine bar, so I'm happy. I think a lot of people will be happy to hear that.
Well, it's not only being revealed to you, but you are the first person to hear about it.
Good. Okay, so and then what about, while we're on that topic, food and drink? We're going to have an episode of the podcast where we focus in. We're talking to Chef Billy with the players. But then obviously for the fans too, you guys have, I think, tried to continue to give that New York flavor to the U.S. Open fans on the site.
Absolutely. And every year it's, what can we do to top it? And we don't really think that things really ever go bad in any of our food things, but anything we could do to make it better, it's what it's all about. We've had tremendous success with our partners at Carrilla the last couple of years with the Korean food they're doing there. They came to us with a poke bowl concept, so we're going to introduce that this year. We've always had great success with our crepe program, but we're working with a French restaurant in New York City, Le Rivage. Their chef, Paul Denamiel, is coming out here, and he's doing all the crepes this year, so really exciting stuff with that. We're expanding a lot of the offerings, like Frank's and Fries. No matter how many fancy different types of foods we sell here, we still sell massive Frank's and Fries. So we got a new outpost of Frank's and Fries out by Court 17. We're calling that the backyard at 17. So we got 5 new food offerings there, and a lot of that stuff will be pretty cool. Dean and DeLuca's are new partners of ours, and they're going to be in the South Plaza this year with a lot of new offerings there. Marcus Samuelson has taken over the operation of Mojito this year. We've completely redone Champions Restaurant that we're partnering with David Burke from BLT. So there's stuff everywhere you walk on the site this year. There's new stuff. We've added Angry Taco, which had great success in the Food Village last year. We added that into the new grandstand. So everywhere on site, there's something new and improved.
Yeah, you reminded me, I haven't had lunch yet. I'm getting very hungry here. So then tell me, obviously we saw Arthur Ashe and the new roof was debuted a year ago, but are there any changes to Ashe this year, or did you sort of try to revisit what you had done in Ashe and improve it for 2017?
Well, you know, when we decided a couple of years ago that we were going to be building the roof, we said to ourselves, the stadium is only 20 years old. A lot of the modern stadiums are good for 40, 50 years. So we knew that this place wasn't getting torn down anytime soon. So the question was really, what do we want to continue to do within Ashe to make it feel relevant? So we're updating restaurants, we're updating concourses, updating bathrooms, you know, all that type of stuff that people need to rely on while they're physically here. We also had 17,000 seats up in the promenade area. It's a big section, and we pulled out all those seats that have been here since the stadium opened, put all new, brand new seats in over this past winter.
Wow, 17,000 new seats. That's not a small undertaking. And then one thing I'm interested in, I live in Manhattan. So for me, commuting in every day, maybe I'll take the shuttle. The 7 train, I think, is popular with a lot of fans. But then I love that the LARR runs out here at special stops at the Metz-Willett Point. But you guys, I think, are working with a lot of different entities as far as making sure that this hub becomes easier to get to, not only, of course, for the players, but for the thousands of people that stream through the gates, too.
Yeah, so really it started almost 10 years ago when the Mets announced that they were going to build a new Citi Field, and we realized quickly that we were going to lose, we rely on their parking pretty much exclusively during the event, and we were going to lose half their parking lot because of the construction. So at that time, working with the Bloomberg administration, they did a phenomenal job helping us get PSAs out to the public to say to them, hey, mass transit is the way to go. As you know, Long Island Railroad direct stop, the number 7 train, which can be kind of lengthy most of the year, is an express stop under 30 minutes most of the time coming out to the open. So our mass transit went up from the 30% just up over 60% now, which is basically meaning more than half the people are coming here by mass transit. You can't ask for better than that, but we keep pushing it each year. If you don't need to drive here, don't drive here. There is plenty of parking both at Citi Field, and when the Mets have a game the same time as us, they can park in the park as well. But mass transit is clearly the way to go.
Okay, now we started off talking about you guys working towards the next U.S. Open after one ends every year, but what's the biggest piece of feedback, or what do you hear from most fans when you go through the fan reviews or however people get in touch with you to say, hey, we loved this, or how do you improve that? What do you usually hear from folks?
Well, when we started the transformation, some of the biggest and most important things to us was the feedback from the fans, and it talked about open space and shade. And so with Arthur Ashe Stadium, we literally built the largest umbrella known to mankind with the roof that we've got there. And we've created shade throughout the day for a minimum of 60 to 70% of the fans. So by 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, everybody's in shade in the bowl. So we really attacked the shade issue in the stadium. And there's a lot more seating on the ground. We added 10,000 more seats between the new grandstand court and all the South Campus courts. There'll be another 4,000 seats in the new Louis Armstrong Stadium. So that's going to help us tremendously with the crowding. We heard a lot from people last year and the feedback from the open after the first year with the new South Campus about how much more spacious it was, how you could stand in one spot and watch matches on 3 or 4 different courts, much like what we had done with the West Campus years ago when we built the viewing gallery for courts 4, 5, and 6. So the great news for us is everything we're doing is really being well received by the fans.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating to hear. Think of so many different issues, but shade, like that is a fascinating sort of concept that I think more and more events are going to have to address too.
There's no question about that. And what we never lose sight of the fact that the fans come out here for 2 to 3 times longer than they would for a general sporting event, with the exception of maybe cricket, which we don't have a lot of in the States. So we want to be respectful of the fact that they don't always want the sun beating down on them, and we got to do what we can to help them with that.
All right. Well, thank you, Danny, for your time. And I've got to get out to the grounds and try one of those new food options too.
Enjoy it. Try something different every day.
All right. Thanks to Danny Zausner, the COO of the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center. Okay, a big thanks to Danny Zausner for taking his time to speak with us about taking care of the fans and what's new at the U.S. Open. Now we get to talk to one of the stars, Andreea Pekovic. She tells us about making sushi on site, and she also gives us her best NPR voice. Let's listen in. Andreea Pekovic, welcome to Inside the U.S. Open. Now, coming back to New York, what do you love about being here in New York City?
Well, it's my favorite place in the world. I want to live here after my career, so I guess it's just somewhere I feel very much at home. And I changed venues this year, so I'm staying at the East Village, and it's been the best decision so far. I really enjoy my time there, and it's not that far to the US Open as I thought, and only good decisions so far.
You're staying in the East Village. I feel like we don't hear players. Usually it's Midtown for the players, right?
I used to stay Midtown, and I always used to stay 29th Street, so I was pretty close to downtown, but still pretty close to Uptown as well. And then I wanted to do something different this year, and I picked this really hip hotel, and it has a really cool casual vibe. So I just thought I might stay there for once, and I'm so glad I do because of this great location, great hotel, and really glad I'm there.
So tell me about, we're actually in the player lounge and people can hear the announcements behind us right now for courts and practices and matches. What's different about this player lounge, or what's unique about, because you guys do this all over the world, but what's different about the US Open?
Well, I just feel like it's a lot bigger. It's very American in its style. I don't know. To me, American is always big carpets, you know, this kind of wooden beigey feel about it. I don't know. Huge screens everywhere.
There's a foosball table over there.
There's a foosball table in the corner. Thank God they put it in the corner. Normally they have it in the center of the players lounge, and everybody who's preparing for their match is going nuts with the people screaming at the foosball table. So so it feels very American, very US to me, and I love that because I want to have the, you know, the cultural flares in each city at each tournament, and I think this one does a good job at showing where we are.
And now for you, obviously the challenge of being in New York, I think traffic, the hot weather, humidity for the players, but what are sort of the favorite things for you as far as the tournament goes?
I love the hectic. I love the stress level. I don't know. It's just somewhere I feel very, very at ease. Something I feel very at ease with. And I like that it's so challenging. It's very challenging. It is the last Grand Slam of the year. Players are tired. We've played a lot. We want to do well at the last Grand Slam. It's not easy to keep up the tension. And then the hard court, the summer in the U.S., the hard court summer in the U.S. is very difficult on the bones. And so everybody's kind of tired but wants to do their best. And it's very challenging. I would say it might be the most challenging Grand Slam of the year. And I love that. I like challenges and I like to be tested. So it's really good to be back.
Okay, now before the U.S. Open, you got to, I think, make some sushi with some of the chefs here. How did that go? And obviously the food options for the players and for the fans are so great here at the U.S. Open. But what was that experience like for you?
It was good. I've never made sushi before in my life. And I had Bob Bryan at my side who helped me. But then it turned into kind of a competition. And you'll hear it here first. Mine was way better. Way better.
What kind of roll did you make?
We made a spicy tuna roll. And I just a natural talent for this thing, you know. I could feel it in my blood, in my bones. And the chef was very proud of me. He was very, very satisfied with my role.
So you mentioned coming into the U.S. Open. It's obviously the last Grand Slam of the year. How does it differ from, say, coming into the Australian Open or the French or Wimbledon as far as people's bodies and your mentality? And because players talk about this being the most challenging slam in that way.
Well, I think what I've said before already, I think it's... If I compare it to the Australian Open now, which is the first tournament of the year, everybody comes super well prepared. They had a great off-season preparation.
It's kind of like back to school, right?
Exactly, yeah. And everybody's excited and you're happy to see all those faces. What have you done? Where were you on vacation? Yeah. You have a new boyfriend. You have a new girlfriend. We don't care, but we want to know. So all these things are super exciting. And then at the US Open, you're like, oh, this guy again, this girl again. It's not that bad. But we've seen each other a lot the years. We know everything about each other. We've played each other a lot. The bodies are starting to crumble. It's September already. And everybody has their issues. Everybody has little injuries. Many have colds and allergies. So it's just when the body breaks down on you, everyone has different breakdowns. So some have injury issues, others get sick, it's the immune system goes down. So all these things come into play and they are very challenging. But I feel like we're in New York City and that makes up for it.
So then when you enter a Grand Slam like this, how do you set expectations as far as what you want out of your tennis?
Well, I think the most important part about this Grand Slam is to keep your energy levels in check. So not practicing too much, trying to really stay... just keep your energy level alive. Stay with everything that you worked on. And I played well here many times before. It was the first Grand Slam I reached second week. So I played well in DC in the preparing tournaments for the US Open. So I'm really looking forward to this one. I hadn't had the best results in the Grand Slams before. So I'm really looking for this one to make up for it. And hopefully it will work out for me that way.
Okay, talk to me because I know you have lots of interests off the court, right? So what are you reading? What are you watching? What's kind of going on in the world of Andrea Petkovic otherwise?
Right now I'm reading actually a book about New York from a from a chosen New Yorker. He's a German, Paul Auster, but he lives in New York. And the book, it's 4321. It's his latest book. It's very well written, and it's a great book. And it's set in the 40s, 50s of New York, and he paints a great picture of the city. So I'm really glad I'm reading that. I was at a reading yesterday of another author who Alex Gilvery, who talked about New York as well. So when I'm here, I really try to get into things. And apart from that, I just take it day by day, explore the restaurants, the cafes, and try to get in some culture as well while I'm trying to prepare.
And you've been trying to do some writing lately too, right? You just said, what was it? You did a column for Sports Illustrated recently?
I think the biggest piece I did right now so far was I wrote for Racket Magazine, a really nice magazine that actually is also here in New York. and I wrote a piece on... I sort of described the rivalry between Willem de Koning and Jackson Pollock to artists from the 30s and 40s who represented the New York School and abstract expressionism, and compared them to Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal, just in terms of rivalry. That was very interesting to me because the mentality, even though it's so different, was very similar in all four of them. And that's the latest piece I wrote. And it was very... it was not that easy. It was so different than playing tennis, and I really had to sit down and think a lot and research, and it was very different, but it was a lot of fun.
I was going to say, that is quite the subject matter for you to tackle, and that was Racket Magazine. And which issue is that, 3 or 4?
I think it's the third issue with Maria Sharapova on the cover. Yeah.
All right, now before we started recording, you were saying that you've got a pretty good NPR voice. So I'm wondering, what should we talk about on NPR this morning? Perhaps the latest culture in New York?
Oh, God, I don't know. But I just love how slowly they speak. Yes. And how they pronounce each syllable. Like, hello, everybody. We are here at NPR in Chicago, in New York City. I just love the voice. It's so soothing.
And I feel like it's required to have 3 or 4 names. You can't just be Nick McCarville or Andrea Pekovic.
No, no,
you have to be Andrea Simona Maria Pekovic.
Petkovic from Liechtenstein. Or something like that. But yeah, it is kind of pretentious, but I like it.
All right, well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
And enjoy your time in New York City.
I will. Thank you very much.
And finally, we've got a chat with Stacey Allister. She's the USTA Chief Executive for Professional Tennis. We heard from Danny Zausner about what's new for fans. Now let's hear what's new for the players here at the US Open in 2017.
One of the coolest things about the US Open is the player experience. And we get the best players around the world coming here to New York for 2 weeks. I'm sitting outside of Arthur Ashe Stadium alongside Chief Executive of Professional Tennis, Stacey Allister. And Stacey, US Open day one, so far so good.
It's been amazing. Nick, we've been open for a week. We opened a week ago. And players are loving their 2017 U.S. Open experience. At this time of the year when they come to New York, it's been a long season. And a lot of pressure is on the athletes when they come here. Their year-end rankings are at stake. Their year-end bonuses. It'll make or break a year on how they'll get into events in 2018 based on their results here,
right,
whether or not they can get into the ATP and the WTA finals. So we are really going above and beyond to welcome them, and our mantra is, how can we help you win? That's what they want to do. How can we help you win, and how can we take care of your family and friends?
Yeah. Now I want to dig into that a little bit later on, but let's talk about what's different on site. Obviously, the fans are going to experience this for the next 2 weeks at the U.S. Open, but what are we seeing that's different on the grounds for the players themselves this year?
I think for 17, the biggest difference is Temporary Louis and this massive structure,
yes,
in the middle of the site with 2018 Louis, which will have our second retractable roof. Our team has done a phenomenal job at building an 8,200-seat temporary stadium on a parking lot with a tree sticking out of it to give our fans and to give our players our third largest stadium. That'll be the biggest difference because so many changes happened last year in 16.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to see. I walked by that temporary Louis to see it, and I did have to do a double take of, wait, that is a parking lot. So tell me about the efforts that went into making sure that that was ready, because as fans will be able to see as well when they're on site, that Louis and the Louis of the future is very much a construction site, and you can already see the bleachers going up, the side of the stadium, and that's going to be ready for 18.
18, a new state-of-the-art 15,000-seat stadium with our second roof, which will be great for our fans and great for the athletes. You know, we can't control Mother Nature, so to be able to have not one but two courts where you can keep both sides of the draw going, and for fans who, you know, this might be their only time they come to the U.S. Open, and now we can deliver not one but two courts. So we're super excited. It's quite an engineering miracle what Danny Zausner and our team down here at the National Billie Jean King National Tennis Center do year-round. And they literally had to take down old Louis, divide the space in two, so we had two separate building sites. Yeah. So they would get the permits from the city to start building new Louis and at the same time construct a temporary 8,000-seat stadium, yeah, which used to be what we called Parking Lot B. Yeah.
Well, this year, obviously, a match court. Now, let's talk about some of those services that you provide. Obviously, in the professional tennis department, you were saying they want to make sure the players are as comfortable as possible. We're going to be exploring in the podcast all sorts of behind-the-scenes elements of the U.S. Open, the food, the ball people, the officials. But the players are here, and they're actually working in tandem with the tournament, right? You want to set them up for the best tennis that they can play during the U.S. Open.
Our job is to help the athletes win. That's why they're here. And whatever we can do to help them perform at their best is good for our fans. So in working with them, what's important? Number one, they want to get here on time. They want their practice time. That is, you know, mission critical. They need the fuel, you know, the right foods to be able to perform. And they need the physio. More and more are traveling with private physios, so increasing that space. We were able to give them a new gym equipment by Technogym, all state of the art. So it's the aggregate of what are the essentials that they need for practice. So all of those have been refurbished or relooked at. Our team doing player dining has done a phenomenal job, from organics, a new grill for lean proteins, a new sushi bar. I see the players leaving each night with about five rows of their sushi. Services in the locker room, but when they come right off, is there a protein shake immediately? All those little things that Eric Buderak, a former player who's joined our team as a director of player relations, has thought through. And, you know, really at the end of the day, there are guests here. There are VIP guests. And their friends and their families are really important to them. And so we've expanded our services to welcome their family and friends and make them just as important as the athlete. And we think that's going to go a long way as well.
And you were saying before we went live that they have a new transportation app so that they can track their cars to and from the U.S. Open.
Yeah, that's right, Nick. So one of their biggest stressors is their practice time. So New York is New York, and that's the great thing about the U.S. Open being in New York. But we know it comes with challenges vis-a-vis traffic. So sometimes the players will tell us, well, my car is late. Well, in fact, their car wasn't late, but maybe, you know, the police told the driver they couldn't wait in that spot, and maybe they've been tucked around the corner. So with our transportation service at Fugazi, they've created a U.S. Open player app where the athletes can actually see where their car is. That's a massive stressor. Maybe the car is 10 minutes late. Yeah. the athlete can be looking. Right. They can stay in their hotel room. Oh, my car is getting close. Then they can come down. More information that we can give to the athlete to defuse, I think, some of that stress before they come onto the site is one of the objectives of the app.
It's like Uber for tennis players, essentially. So now tell me also, because this was something that I found out about more last year, but the sort of amenities or the gifts that players are allowed. Now, obviously, they're making pretty good money out there on tour, but you guys want to show them the best New York City when they get here to the U.S. Open.
Yeah, like it's the overall experience, you know, from helping them perform at their best. But we want them to have an amazing experience off the court in this great city. So along with the food service, we have 24-hour concierge. They can text this service if they need anything, restaurant reservations and so forth. And then, of course, they are making $50 million over the next 2 weeks.
Collectively, not one person.
Collectively, you know, the highest purse in the history of Grand Slam tennis. But they also like gifts. Each tournament always provides a gifting service. And we've really taken it to the next level with our U.S. Open gifting experience hosted by Nordstrom's. All main draw players, singles and doubles, go into a gifting suite, like a Nordstrom's pop-up store.
Yeah.
And there are multiple luxury items from Tiffany, from sunglasses, cashmere, travel blankets, Bose headsets.
Sounds terrible.
It sounds terrible. And they go in as beautifully set up. And the comments have been, what, I get one of each?
Yeah.
Versus they thought they picked one item. So it's a retail value of $1,500. It's certainly the most luxurious premium gifting suite ever in tennis. And it's going a long way. So it puts them all in a good mood. It's a little extra thank you. We value your contribution that you're making to this U.S. Open, because at the end of the day, what's this all about? This is about promoting and growing American tennis. And all of these international players, along with our American players, help ultimately the USTA to grow the sport.
Yeah, and I learned this last year as well, but there's a concierge service. So if they want to get dinner reservations or go to a show or what have you, they can call a desk or walk up to a desk and say, hey, I want to go see Wicked or whatever they want to do in the city.
Yeah, so we have the concierge service right here. They're walking around with iPads. They're showing players different restaurant options. They can show them real time what theater they can get them to. In addition, they have a hotline. It's 24 hours. It gets picked up. Be the middle of the night. Maybe they've lost. Maybe they're out enjoying the city and they need assistance. We've got them 24 hours through our reserve VIP concierge.
Okay, now lastly, there were some changes that you were trying out on court during the qualifying event. So this made a lot of headlines this summer when it was announced, and I think some people were confused because they didn't realize it was just for the qualifying. So we've got a serve clock, which is essentially a shot clock. We've got a warm-up clock, making sure that the players start on time, and then also limiting time as far as when they leave the court, changing attire. You want to make sure we've got tennis moving quickly. How did that go as far as sort of trying that out in the qualifying event?
It went incredibly well. Well beyond our expectations. And I've had a long history in tennis with being at the WTA, introducing innovations where you get a lot of feedback from the athletes. I got to tell you, we didn't get any complaints from the qualifying players who participated in the test innovations last week. And if players don't like something, they you hear about it. So it was great. You know, what we're trying to do really, as you said, is we're trying to keep the flow of the competition going.
Yeah.
We know with particularly our younger fans, they want more immediacy. And there's historical that a 5-minute warm-up was becoming much longer than a 5-minute warm-up.
Yeah.
When an NFL game starts at 4 o'clock on Sunday, it starts at 4. And our fans, well, is it starting at 10 after 4? Is it starting at 13 minutes after 4? So we have to put some more discipline there. We have seen where all of a sudden 25 seconds in between points is becoming 42 seconds. So we're not changing the rules, but we're enforcing the rules.
Yeah.
Giving the tools to the chair umpires,
right,
and to the athletes. What was interesting to see last week was actually watching the athletes as they were bouncing. They'd then look at the clock.
Yeah. Right.
So it helped them, I think. You know, oh, I've got 10 seconds left. So then you can see them slowing down. So that was great. And then coaching from the stands.
Yeah, I didn't mention that, but on-court coaching, or excuse me, not coaching,
no, coaching
on-court, from the stands. So the players basically can get coaching from their coach in the stands while they're playing.
Correct. So from the one side, you couldn't go across,
gotcha,
across the court, couldn't disrupt play or delay of game. And that went really well. I think the coaches were in designated areas. A big win was from the chair umpires. The chair umpires said to me, thank you. Now we can focus on the important things in the match versus having to police the coaches. We all know what's going on. That's the hypocrisy of coaching. And so, you know, our position is let's make it legal because we know what's happening. That was the premise behind on-court coaching in 2007. It's happening. It's part of the game. It's great for the fan who's particularly watching at home the on-court. So this is a step to try it in Grand Slam tennis. And great feedback from the chair umpires and great feedback from those coaches. And for those that are against it, no problem. Don't use it. Yeah. You don't have to use it.
Right. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for having me. If you can sneak me into that Nordstrom gift suite, I'm all for it.
I have to work on that.
All right, this has been Stacey Allister with us here at Inside the US Open. Thanks again, Stacey. Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Inside the US Open. Please head to Apple Podcasts if you haven't already and rate and review us. And make sure you subscribe. For more tournament information, head to usopen.org.